Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
And you're getting a special Feathers report. We are coming to you again, not live, but recorded. We tried to get on this as soon as we could. So let's give you a little background on why we're doing this. Last week, our guest on the podcast was Phil Maffetone. Is it Maffetone?
Yeah, okay. on the Drop podcast.
Yeah, on the Drop podcast. Robbie interviewed him, and they got into heart rate training, which, you know, he's helped a ton of people with the heart rate training. A lot of people have found that way of getting into running to be very, you know, beneficial. It's not for everybody, but heart rate training does seem to work and provide results for people. Now, it was very interesting because I think he has a huge following that listened to the podcast that are, you know, chimed in and watched it on YouTube and listened to it on the Drop. But then we also had our regular listeners drop on our who listen to both Fuel for the Soul and the Drop listen to it. And there was some conflicting information, especially when it came to nutrition. And so a lot of feedback, like, Meg, were we getting, like, how many people were emailing us, DMing us, getting us on Instagram?
I mean, we got a ton, and so I know, Megan, you probably got double what we got.
But what was the general feeling? And maybe you can read some of them.
I mean, yeah, Megan, you chime in here, but the general feeling was people were confused, upset, and wanted specifically you to talk on some of these points that he brought up on the episode that basically directly conflict with what we are saying on a regular basis.
Yeah, he definitely rubbed a lot of our Fuel for the Soul listeners the wrong way with some of the things he was saying is probably a good way to put it. But I do have to say that I think it just shows how devout you guys' followers for the Drop and also Fuel for the Soul are. I mean, I saw that pop up at the end of my run that there was a new episode of The Dropout with Phil Maffetone, and literally 45 minutes later, it was like, bing, 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 in my Instagram with all these people, like, and I was like, hang on. I was like, I don't have time to listen today, but I promise I will listen after work tonight, and we'll get after this. So I was, you know, wasn't exactly sure what to expect, but there were some people pretty fired up that were telling me, like, some verbatim things that he was saying. So, of course, when I started listening to it, I had, like, a notes sheet in my phone that I was, like, putting some of these comments that I knew were probably – I've worked with enough of you guys. We've talked enough about nutrition that I knew what comments were probably, like, oh, to people, you know. So we pulled those out, and we'll talk about them today. But, you know, I think it's important – just like Thomas said, just like, you know, Robbie has said as well, like, to bring some experts on that look at training a little bit differently can be interesting, you know. But when we really look at Phil Maffetone's background, right, he's a chiropractor. He has, let's see, some certifications in physiotherapy, Chinese medicine. He has a bachelor's degree in human biology. So he's not a dietitian. I mean, let's just put that out there. He has his own nutrition thoughts and principles, and he knows what works for him. But again, he is not, you know, studying the science behind nutrition and endurance performance. Like, that's not his bread and butter. His bread and butter is heart rate training, right? So yeah. I think that's, like, something to remember as well. And then also remember, he did his training, I think he told Robbie, in, like, 1977 was when he, like, launched this type of training. I will still never forget interviewing Joan Benoit Samuelson in Chicago last fall. And when she won Boston in 1979, I asked her in front of a stage of people, I was like, what did you fuel with? And she literally whispered to me, she was like, you sure you want to ask that? And I was like, I do. I want to know. And she was like, I didn't take any fuel. I didn't drink any fluid. And she was like, we didn't know in 1979 what we know now. Right? Like, sports nutrition research is so different. I mean, I sometimes can't keep up with the changes from month to month and new things. And you just have to keep such an open mind about nutrition as it evolves, as it changes, those types of things. So to me, as I'm listening, I was like, I just feel like these views are just a little bit old school and or very personalized to what works for him.
I'm going to read off a couple of these listener comments that you got, Megan, and then we'll go through sort of some of the statements that Phil mentioned and maybe some of the science of why there might be an alternative. Okay, so Meredith said, oh, Feathers, I think there needs to be some damage control after the latest BITR pod with Dr. Maffetone. I'm kind of freaking out over here. I'll be over here in the fetal position till y'all address this on Fuel for the Soul.
See? Fear.
I just got back from a run listening to this week's Drop with Phil Maffetone. The gloves are off. I kept waiting for Robbie to interject and laugh out loud when he mentions you and carb loading. I think Fuel for the Soul needs a fact check episode. Well, that's what we're here for, people. Yeah, there's it's a lot of people, like you kind of mentioned right before this, that are maybe a little bit panicked that that they're doing something wrong now.
Well, you know, when you have somebody who's an authority figure and they talk confidently about stuff like talking about carbs turning to sugar and that sugar is bad and sugar's the devil and all of that stuff. When I know from working with you and talking to you that there's a reason that carbs turn to sugar and that sugar fuels your body and it's gasoline for your body. Again, it, you know, immediately I started thinking, yes, it's poison to people who are sedentary, but so is, you know, eating too much steak with, you know, high fat count.
Right. It's like, and yeah, I mean, I just think it's so important to play around with this and find what works best for us individually. Like you just said, Thomas, you felt terrible when you were trying to get into ketosis. You know, some people might not. So I can't stress enough before we jump into some of these points that you have to find how you feel your best for fueling in your runs, out of your runs, when you're asking your body to train for a half marathon, a full marathon, an ultra, whatever you're asking your body to do. You really need to be honest with yourself. Like, do you feel good? Are you getting enough fuel? Are you recovering? Are you nailing your potential? And if you are, then nutrition is probably working regardless of who says what, right? So like always make sure that you're paying attention to how you feel throughout it. But there were some pretty good statements here that we can, you know, chit chat about.
Yeah, this first one is my favorite, I think. And Phil said, if you're eating junk food, you are turning off your aerobic system. First of all, what does that even mean?
So our aerobic system is literally, when I looked up the actual definition, it's the combustion of carbohydrates and fats in the presence of oxygen. So our aerobic system, we talk about this all the time. What fuels our runs? Fats and carbohydrates. Those are the two things that fuel our aerobic system. So that's what he's referring to. He's saying that we're turning that off if we're eating junk food and too many carbohydrates, which if we really look at it, like there's no way to turn off our aerobic system. What we eat might change whether we're burning more fats or carbs. And we also know that our paces out there change if we're burning fats or carbohydrates. So if we're trying to run at a faster pace, we need more carbohydrates around to be able to hold that pace, because carbohydrates are a faster fuel source than fat. That's why when he's telling people to slow down and to decrease their heart rate, you're using more fat for fuel when you are running per his method. Of course you are. Your heart rate is much, much lower. So our body has time to oxidize those stored fats and turn them into fuel. But when we're out there trying to PR a marathon and our pace is significantly faster for significantly longer, we're going to need to rely significantly more, like at least 75% of the fuel we're burning will be carbohydrates during that time. So intensity changes it, you know, but by adding some carbohydrates in there, we're not turning off our aerobic system, right? It's always there and it's always being fueled by both fat and carbs. It just depends on, you know, the intensity and, you know, what we've eaten before the run.
I'm glad you brought up the difference, because for people who are listening who don't understand what the heart rate training does, is basically you're trying to stay at a certain heart rate, which is at a lower heart rate than most people are able to run even their easy pace at. So you start there and then eventually your body adjusts and you can start picking up the pace, but keeping your heart rate low, which is less taxing on the body. So when you talk about that, you're saying for his training, then that method of diet could actually be beneficial for the way that he's asking people to train.
I think I still want people to eat before they go out for a run, 100%. I don't think people should go be, you know, doing this type of training fasted. That's not going to be good for us either, because we're out there even longer, right? But, you know, technically you could eat a graham cracker with a ton of peanut butter on it and probably be okay versus eating four graham crackers, you know? So you could potentially kind of change how you're fueling before it if you're going for that method, that longer, slower, lower heart rate. Because you'll be burning significantly more fat for fuel while you're out there, and you'll just be out there longer. Yeah.
Okay. He also said refined carbs just turn into sugar immediately in the body.
I just laughed at that one. Like, I hear this all the time. Like, oh, refined carbs are immediately turned to sugar. I'm like, so is every other single carbohydrate that our body ingests. Every single carbohydrate that's digestible by our body will be turned to sugar.
Well, that's we kind of talked about that in the past with, like, quality carbs versus, you know, non-quality carbs. And your answer has always been, it ends up the same.
It has a very different path. Don't get me wrong. Like, a very different path. So if we're eating whole grains, it's going to take a lot longer to break that down into sugar in our bloodstream. It's not going to impact our blood sugar and insulin the same. Like, don't get me wrong. There's a huge difference between eating a Skittle and eating a banana, you know? But at the same time, like, it just made me laugh because it's like he was using the point of refined sugar is just turned, or refined carbs are just turned to sugar, where almost like a fearful type thing where every carb is turned to sugar. Like, let's just break this down into the science instead of making people scared of, you know, certain carbohydrates.
Well, but maybe it's to rephrase it too. Like, we talk about sugar and what your body is turning carbs into. Mm-hmm. What it's really doing, it's a fuel refinery in your body. Mm-hmm. So the fuel that we need for exercise or for, you know, these endurance sports comes from sugar, or however you want. Like, when your carbs break down, your body's turning it into a fuel for your body to use as energy.
Correct.
The problem is if you are sedentary and you're not moving, once your body turns that into sugar, it stores it as fat.
If your carb stores are locked and loaded, yeah. If your glycogen stores are fully loaded, then yeah, you would store it as fat. Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, where people are afraid of. Like, when we talk to people and they're like, I don't want to eat too many carbs, what they're afraid of is that they're not expending the energy that the carbs are creating. Mm-hmm. So when you listen to somebody say something like that, do you feel like that it's a fear tactic, almost like, hey, if you eat this, it's going to be sugar, which is bad for your body, which will turn you fat?
Oh, I totally think it is. Yeah. And I mean, by no means am I saying, let's go eat a bunch of candy. You know, like, I could be, what I'm saying could be misconstrued into that, but I'm not. I'm not saying, like, we need to all go out and eat a bunch of sugar. But I also, any excess calories we take in are stored as fat. Too much protein, too much fat, too many carbs. Like, I don't think carbs are the reason he kept mentioning that so many Americans are overweight or overfat now. You know, he thinks it's 100% sugar. You know, if you look at the research, it's when we started eating more sugar. But we also know that there are a lot of factors than just sugar. But that obviously is very much, you know, his thought process and belief around that.
So how do you take the fear out of that for people?
So the best way to do it is to look at it from a performance standpoint. So there's a time and a place that refined carbohydrates and more elemental sugars are beneficial for our performance. So if we're looking to perform at a certain level, we need a Morton gel that is straight sugar. We need a more refined carbohydrate like a white bagel or a graham cracker or some cereal right before we run. So that, you know, I try to get people to frame it as like, what is the most efficient fuel for my body and what I'm expecting it to do right now, which is probably some carbohydrates.
You brought up a good point there for a second. You mentioned that Morton is practically straight sugar. Mm-hmm. They put a lot of energy into studying how to get someone down to a sub 2-hour marathon. And that was all part of the project. And that was, let's load him up with as many carbs as he can take. As a matter of fact, if we can throw a gel around it so that it gets to his small intestines before he starts absorbing it, that's even better. So we can load in more carbs. Mm-hmm. So is it something that's only for the elite runner that needs these carbs to perform, or does it benefit all of us?
No, if we are trying to perform at our peak performance, regardless of where we have competed in the past, but right now, if we are trying to perform at the best we possibly can at a half marathon distance or further, we need those simple carbohydrates to perform at that level. Yeah, regardless of pace, regardless of the person.
All right, this next one's good too. Carbs are an addiction like cigarettes.
This was brought up quite a few times, and I love this one. And I mean, to be completely transparent, The whole idea of is food an addiction is very controversial. You can find research to support either direction. So I actually wasn't even going to try to cherry pick certain research articles for this, because you honestly can find something to support either side. So what we're looking at when we're thinking about an addiction is there's three different criteria. So when they try to find out if a substance is addictive or not, does it trigger compulsive use? Does it have psychoactive effects? And is it highly reinforcing? So when I read those three things, I'm like, that's personalized, right? I guess sugar could cause that in someone, but not everyone.
What about coffee?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to look that up
The caffeine is psychoactive, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I really do feel like that just goes back to the individual, though. Like, right. I think some people... They say, you know, you have a, quote, addictive personality. Like, mm-hmm. We've all heard that before. I really think it's the person. It has nothing to do with necessarily the intake.
Right.
Yes and no. But I think if you take a general population, and I think that, like, I do feel like some people are. Like, if I put some cookies out, there's some people who can resist them, and there's some people who cannot resist uh-huh. cookies.
I agree.
Would I say that some people we know, Jarrett, would have trouble passing up a delicious fresh baked chocolate chip cookie? I do. Do I think he's addicted? Might be.
Yeah. Yeah. But it makes me laugh, because I'm like, we're literally comparing sugar to cigarettes. Like, seriously, I mean, we know the harmful benefits or harmful effects, I should say, of nicotine.
Well, there's also no benefit to... Nicotine. Well, not nicotine. Right. Nicotine itself is a drug. They're saying there are some benefits. Sure. Smoking, though, breathing in smoke, carcinogens. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they've proven that inhaling smoke is bad for you.
Exactly. And a lot of this goes back to research on the brain. So they do like fMRIs and look at like what areas of our brain are lighting up when we are eating sugar. And some of the same areas that are triggered in an addictive drug is triggered by sugar. But to me, I'm like, can we really extrapolate that out, that then we are addicted to sugar? Like, sure, I see across the board, if we are intaking more sugar, say, let's use like a holiday as an example, whether it's Halloween or Christmas or Hanukkah, you know, and we're eating more baked goods, we're eating more sugar, we want more, right? So, I mean, I guess someone could classify that as addictive. To me, it's just like, all right, let's get back to baseline. Let's eat the foods that we know support our body the most. Let's maybe not eat so many cookies and see what happens, you know? And most of the time, we're not going through withdrawal as we are trying to, you know, wean ourselves down a little bit off of the sweets that might be around at certain times of the year. But I think... Again, like we were saying, it's very highly individualized, right? Like you were saying, you know, some people who, I call it food noise. Like when we see certain foods, they just can't stop thinking about it and they want it. Like in their head, they're hearing, like maybe Jarrett's like, I need that cookie, need that cookie, need that cookie. Whereas Megan can look at it and be like, eh, and walk away and never think about that cookie again.
Yeah, but it could be something else. It could be pizza for you, whatever. Right, but, you know, we've brought it up before in the past. Megan and I did the Whole 30 before, which is no sugar. Yep. Very light carbs, wasn't it?
Just, no problem.
Just not many options, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did notice, you know, I did find my taste for sugar changed. But I actually think that made me crave sugar more. So, like, I ended up having a coconut water.
Yeah.
And it tasted so sweet to me. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I want more of that. Like, mm-hmm. that, when I deprived myself, I think I was even more... keyed into like that flavor and that
but
reward.
We've also talked about this on the show, and I think it's like, isn't that also a sign that your body needs more potentially like carbs? Like, it's, if your cravings are that strong, then they aren't, like, your needs aren't being met in some cases.
Absolutely. And if you restrict something long enough, of course you're going to go crazy when it comes back. You know, like, use a kid as an example. Like, if a kid's raised in a household where they're never allowed to eat candy, all of a sudden they go to a friend's house that has candy, they're going to make themselves ill on the candy. Adults are the same way, you know? So the more we restrict something, the more we want it. Exactly. Right?
So it's like finding that balance. And when I went over to people's houses, I was like glued to the, oh, wow, TV.
Right. It's just, it's a balance. You know what I mean? And I just think it's important to find that balance for you. So some people might do better without certain things in their house. Other people are going to go crazy when they see them then. You know, we just have to figure out like what's the best approach for us and just make sure that it's not overly restrictive, because we know that's not good either. And, you know, a lot of the research on food and addiction and comparing it, like there was a Times article that came out like years ago that was saying Oreos were as addictive as cocaine. And I'm like, yeah, and rats, like we are not rats, you know? Right. So I think like we just take it with a grain of salt. And I mean, clearly I'm on team. I'm not convinced that there's an addiction quality of sugar, but I do think some people, as I said, have more food noise about it. It's harder to say sure. no to it. Like, I think there are some things at play there. Yeah.
Okay. So he said, quote, he hears all the time, I'm a runner. I need carbohydrates. And he's saying, no, you do not.
He was like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, the gloves are coming out. No, I'm kidding. And, you know, if anybody listened, Robbie did say, like, oh, we have a feel for the soul. Yeah. They like carbs over there.
And he did say, because when Robbie mentioned that you love carb loading and have, like, a bunch of bagels before, and he said, if you are seeing performance increases time over time and not any negatives, then he would never tell you to do otherwise.
He did. And he listed, I actually didn't write those things down, but he did list out, like, if your body composition's not changing, if your performance, and he listed out all these things that were very valid. He was like, your nutrition's probably working. And I was like, check, check, check. Guess it's working for me, you know? So you're right. They were, it was a very valid point. And again, it all goes back. Like, the human body is meant to process carbohydrates. Like, our body prefers to run off of carbs. Our brain wants carbs. Our muscles want carbs. Again, at the end of the day, it's a balance. Do most of us feel better at a meal when we have some carbs that have some fiber and some fat and some protein? Keeps us full longer? Absolutely. Most of us don't feel good during carb loading or when we're increasing carbs a lot more than our body's used to. It's a balance. So, you know, I think we've got to find that balance and strike what's right for us. But at the same time, like, to just blanketly say that runners don't need carbs is just not accurate when we look at the actual research. Like, the one thing that we know from tons of research on endurance athletes is carbohydrates are the macronutrient that needs increase the most as our duration of activity per day increases. So aka more miles, more carbs. There is tons of research to support that from a performance standpoint, from a recovery standpoint, from an overall health and injury standpoint. Like, if we have adequate carbs coming into our body to support the mileage that we're asking our body to run, we are going to be a healthier runner in the long term.
I feel like in general that anytime you skew one side too far or one side to, you know, it's like the middle ground and moderation. And they brought up moderation during the podcast, but it was moderation, but don't have moderation when it comes to carbs.
No sugar.
Yeah, no sugar. That always is a red flag for me when it comes to nutrition. I don't have as much knowledge as you do, obviously. But I feel like there is like a well-rounded diet, and that includes fats, proteins, carbs, like these things that seem to be extending the life cycle of humans and everything like that. So when you hear something when people are restrictive or they cut something completely out, what is that? Does that trigger for you as well?
Yeah, it does. And I want to know, like, why are they cutting it out? How does it make them feel? Is this sustainable? If somebody tells me, like, I don't want to eat X, Y, or Z, and they're totally fine and they don't eat it and it's not an issue, I'm like, all right, right? That's a personal preference. Or if somebody wants to try to run on a little bit lower carb than maybe I would normally recommend, let's play it. Let's try. Let's see how you feel. You know, let's make sure the rest of your nutrition is in line. So, yeah, I just think it's incredibly personalized. And it's just something that we can't just say across the board we don't need it, because we know we do. We have research to prove that, like, performance is much better, recovery is better, longevity in the sport is better, you know, when we have that balanced nutrition, which includes carbohydrates.
I mean, that's probably the number one thing I increased after working with you is carb intake and timing, specifically around, you know, big, long workouts and stuff like that. And it's had a huge impact. So I know personally, because I've gone through it and seen the other side, but I think sometimes it's hard when, like Thomas was talking about earlier, when you have this person mm-hmm. who of authority is speaking with authority mm-hmm. and
confidence.
It sounds like mm-hmm. they know exactly what they're saying.
You know what I was mm-hmm. curious about? Because I have yet to find that, like, anytime I hear somebody doing heart rate training, it's been male. Mm-hmm. I don't think I know one female that's like,
that's pretty true.
I don't doing either. Math training.
It's always been males, yeah. Yeah.
Because it could be something that works really well for men versus women.
Well, and they do. There is research out about that. And what's her name? Stacey Sims mm-hmm. has talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Like when specifically not, I don't think keto she was referencing, but the intermittent fasting, how that can have a benefit for men, but not more for so women. So yeah. I'm sure mm-hmm. that I wouldn't be surprised if there was a much bigger impact on men than women for something like keto. Well, okay, so all of these statements I've been like, I kind of just brush and laugh off, and I'm like, yeah, that's not true. This is whatever. Like, this one kind of freaked me out because I was like, wait, what?
See?
He said,
people are scared.
I know. I'm included. He said, eating too many carbs changes our metabolism for the worse. I was like, what? Why?
I know. So why much fear mongering. So much fear mongering. I know. I was just like, oh gosh, I just hope. Like, I work so hard to get people to not fear food. And then I hear these statements and I'm like, crap, I'm going to have to undo all this. Like, honestly, I listening to the podcast, like, no hard feelings at all. Like, I like just like Thomas said, it was very intriguing to hear his side of the story. But the only thing that, like, burned my britches a little was I was like, I've worked so hard to help people get over food fears because I just think that that can crush performance, that can crush body composition when we are scared to death of certain things. So this one was, yeah, just like Meg said, I think this one was, like, a real fearful one. Eating too many carbs is not going to change our metabolism for the worse. So I think probably the best research to kind of illustrate this is the Journal of the American Medical Association is probably the biggest, most reputable, like, medical journal, right, that we can do research in. So they only accept the best studies. So they did a study with over 600 people, men and women, and for an entire year they manipulated their nutrition for intentional weight loss with either a low-fat or a low-carb diet. So, you know, and they looked to see what happened. They watched their blood sugar, they watched their insulin, and what they found was there was absolutely no difference in weight loss or metabolism in these people, whether they ate 20% carbs per day or 55% carbs per day. So I think it's very important to know that at the end of the day, total energy intake is probably what trumps body composition the most, not where it's coming from. We have more studies on body composition change and weight loss and metabolism than any other, like, topic when it comes to nutrition, because people are so fascinated, because we can't figure out, there is no end all be all of, like, what helps with our metabolism and body composition the most. It's a little bit different for everybody, but the facts that we do know that kind of scares me about this statement is, one, underfueling will crush our metabolism. So if we're fearful of carbs and we are a runner and we are not eating enough, we will absolutely screw up our metabolism. Whereas if you were eating enough carbs, it might actually help your metabolism. We also know that the thing that helps our metabolism the most as runners' recovery, especially as we get older, is adequate protein throughout the day. So that has nothing to do with any of this, right? Is making sure we're nailing our protein 3 times a day, which we've talked about a lot on here. That is incredibly important to hanging on to body composition and overall metabolism as we get older, as we're training harder. But if we get ourselves into an energy deficit as a runner, no matter how much protein we throw at it, we're going to lose lean body mass, which then decreases our metabolism. So, you know, my beef with this statement is, it's my fear that it's going to lead to people underfueling with carbohydrates, which in the end is going to ruin our metabolism more than actually eating some carbs and sugar would in, you know, a supportive, healthy, you know, diet.
Okay, you kind of touched on it there, but I want some more clarification. So we are seeing the fear thing that if you eat this, you'll screw up your metabolism, right? Mm-hmm. Let's flip it the other side. Is there things that we can do to increase our metabolism and to make us actually burn fuel mm-hmm. better?
So to preserve our metabolism as a very active runner, which is everybody listening to this podcast, we have to make sure that we're eating before we run, because we know if we get into too far of a caloric hole while we're running, that our body kind of freaks out and decreases metabolism. We also need to make sure we're recovering with adequate protein plus carbs after, for that exact same reason. Plus, if we're not recovering with protein, we're losing lean muscle mass. And then same as the day goes on. So honestly, like, strategically fueling well around your run is going to be the best thing for preserving body composition and metabolism, and then eating enough on a daily basis. Because when we look at why people's metabolisms suck, it's because they're over-restricting and not eating enough, or they're not nailing that recovery nutrition piece soon enough, and we are, like, decreasing lean muscle mass, which, again, decreases metabolism in the long run.
Doesn't that seem counterintuitive, Meg? Like, eat more, burn it faster?
I mean, yeah, I think just because I've listened to Megan for so long and, like, implemented these tactics that I fully believe them. So.
Well, yeah, and you're also getting, like, shredded from 90-mile weeks. I think that is the hardest concept. When I hear the feedback that we get back from the show is that people think they're going to eat too much and take in too much. And I think if there's a way that you can, and I know you're hammering it away, maybe there's a clean way that we can make it, like, really comprehensible to mm-hmm. everybody that, like, if you do this, this mm-hmm. is what you can expect performance. This is what mm-hmm. you can expect body composition. Like, where people going wrong is those in between those times is either eating too much mm-hmm. or eating the wrong mm-hmm. things.
And I've helped a lot of people do this one-on-one, and I'm always just so happy when they actually trust me to do it, because they do. It's crazy as it sounds. They do end up focusing more and eating more than they were when they were over-restricting and screwing up their body composition. But we have to be patient. Like, this is like a 3+ month commitment to changing things. And people are like, I can't believe the body composition changes that I've seen and been able to maintain just by being smarter about my nutrition, the timing, the balance. And it takes some effort, right? And the other thing is, a lot of times it's like people are, oh, I need to eat more carbs, and they end up scaling up fat too. And then we're just getting too much energy. If we get too much energy, we're going to gain weight, you know? So we have to be smart about how we're balancing things here in order to achieve these goals. But, you know, I think, again, we can't point blame at one macronutrient or another. It's a whole picture, and it all plays off of each other, and we just have to be smart about it and not fear any one element of our nutrition. Unless we're allergic, then you can have a fear. Yeah.
Okay, a couple more statements to get through here. He said, if you're eating a high carb diet, you're eating junk food, and we want to avoid the junk food.
The junk food. What is junk food?
Yeah, seriously, what is junk food?
You know what it is.
Like, well, Oreo cookies?
No, I was curious. I was like, is there a definition of junk food?
Well, he said anything with refined flour was junk food.
Okay.
I believe he made that statement.
Yeah. So when you Google, like, and try to find, like, a Webster definition of junk food, it says food with low nutritional value. And I'm, like, balking at that, because I'm like, there's always a nutritional value of food, right? Like, that's what I do for a living. It's that intentional, like, choose this here to support this. You know what I mean? Like, you're always getting something from the food. It's just, was that the right intention, and did we need it at that time? You know? But the thing that this brought me back to is Kenyans, right? The fastest humans in the world are eating 80% of their diet from carbohydrates. 80%. And I mean, arguably, I've actually never been to Kenya to observe their eating, but we've done enough research, and I feel like I've talked to enough people that feed, you know, Kipchoge when he's in the United States, that they're eating a crazy high carb diet, and it might not be refined. I mean, I don't know how refined their cornmeal is that they're eating. You know, some of it might be, some of it might not be. But I mean, the point here is the fastest humans on the planet are eating predominantly carbohydrates. Are those different carbs than we are eating? Absolutely. We could go into a whole episode on that as well. But to just blanketly say, if you're eating a high carb diet, you're eating junk, like, that's not true. That's not true at all.
That was also a weird statement that he said, in the history of men, we're eating more. For the first time, we're eating more carbs than meat, or
oh, yeah, that proteins. Was, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, is that true? Because, like, I'm like, didn't we have to, like, hunt something? Like, yeah. I would think that more readily available were fruits, nuts,
grains.
Seeds. And grains,
yep.
And those kind of things than, like, I think that there's a romanticized thing that we are walking around just eating animals all day.
Yeah. The caveman diet. Yeah. That
was yeah.
Like, I don't think cavemen were only eating meat, too. Yeah. I don't think so. That's a good point. Yeah.
All right. Our last one here, which, I mean, as soon as he first said over fat, I cringed a little bit. And then he said, like, 20,000 more times. So I guess that's, like, is that, like, the PC way to say things now?
It's, like not saying someone's homeless. You say they're unhoused.
Yeah.
They're not you fat. Know, they're over fat.
I don't even know, like, what the PC term for any of this is. And I thought about looking it up. And then I'm, like, I'm not sure I actually care to look it up. Like, I just don't love the word over fat, even if it is supposed to be the word that we're supposed to use.
I do. Yeah. Here's what I do think.
It feels harsh.
It does sound harsh, but I do think it's descriptive. Like what you're saying is that for that person, they're carrying more fat than they should be.
They have excess fat, yeah.
So I get that he's not intending it to be. I don't think it's trying to be mean or triggering or anything like that.
Yeah.
What I think he's trying to say is that that person's carrying more weight than they need to or to perform, and it's probably hindering their performance to be overweight, like over fat.
Well,
I was gonna say overweight, but that's not it.
Yeah,
I was just gonna say, I think the cringiest part for me was that he said, if you go to a race like a marathon and you look around, you're gonna see all these people that are over fat. And what really crushes my soul is like these people are towing the line at a marathon.
And trying.
And probably worked really hard to get there. Like,
yeah. I legitimately have chills. Like, it makes me so sad to hear that. Because, again, and maybe that's why this whole word just bothers me. Because I don't care what your body shape, size, habitus, anything is. You are out there and you are moving your body in a meaningful way. And that's what we're all here to celebrate in the running community.
You period. Also don't know where people are in their journey. Like,
right.
Like, is this person, were they over fat?
Right.
And now
have they lost 100 pounds? Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. You don't know where people are. And
exactly. And like, I think both of our missions and what we do outside of the podcast is trying to create a sense of community within runners. So many of us feel like lone ducks because none of our friends or family do what we do or are passionate about this. So we build this community, and this community doesn't matter what size, shape, speed, pace, what your PRs are. Like, we don't care about that. We care that you're passionate about moving your body, that you like what running brings to your life, mentally, physically, all of those types of things. And like we said, like, I don't think it matters what our body looks like in order to do that. And I think we're trying to fight that culture of we need to look X way to be a runner. And then to hear him say that, it was like, oh no, you can't say that. Like, that is so wrong in so many ways. You know, anybody can move. And to Thomas's point, we don't know what that body has been through and what that journey has been for that person. And we just need to celebrate that everybody is here doing something that is so overall good, you know, for health.
Yeah,
I just feel like I would never want someone to be discouraged to go out there and try based off of a comment like that. So that was like my biggest like.
Yeah, and when you get up anger. To that line, wear the tight shorts, wear the tank
Heck
top,
yeah.
wear the, you know.
Wear the sports bra, right?
Wear what you want to wear.
Yeah.
If you want to wear Alpha Flies, wear the Alpha Flies.
Heck
like,
yeah.
Don't, like we had a woman write in recently about, she's like, I only run this pace. Would I still benefit from having speed day shoes? And I'm like, yes, because when you put them on, you're going to feel like you can fly. And like, if that gives you an extra 30 seconds per mile, because you feel like you have, you know, the best fun shoe on and it feels good when you run and your legs feel fine when you're done, then yeah, do it. But as the slowest person on this team right here, I've seen you guys eat a crap ton of carbs and I can't keep up with you. So I don't know what's happening. And neither one of you, I would say, is overfat.
No, and I see it time and time again. I've done it in my life. I see it with clients. I think when we restrict things and we label things as good and bad, it's not as good of an outcome as if we have an open mind to balanced eating, allow anything to work, anything to fit, be very intentional, right? We're being intentional about when we're using certain foods in our lives. But at the same time, like, there needs to be a time to go and let your kid get 4 cookies for breakfast like I did yesterday. You know, we don't do that every day, but we all had this is all for you guys.
How fast was he running around the house?
After I put him in the car and drove him home afterwards. You know, yeah. Like, I think... it's just so important to just allow that freedom in our lives when it comes to nutrition.
And I'm going to bring up something else that's happened with working with you and talking to you all this time is, again, and I brought it up in the past, that the way that we fuel is not like a set it and forget it. Mm-hmm. It is I'm gearing up for a marathon right now. Mm-hmm. It's Friday before a 20-mile run. It's okay to, you know, we make a homemade pizza. I eat the whole pizza. Maybe Megan's got a slice. I don't know. I'll eat that one too because I'm going to be running big miles the next day. And then, you know, when I wake up, I'm going to have them graham crackers. I probably had carbs the day before that because I knew I was going to be trying to hit paces. Mm-hmm. But then weeks when I'm not, I don't eat as much.
Right. Right. My body doesn't eat very differently off season and in season. Totally. I totally agree. Yeah. So it's so just it's, having
and don't be afraid of that either. Mm-hmm. Like, you can ramp up, ramp down, fuel mm-hmm. for the event. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's me ranting.
Okay, Megan, what are, like, is there any, like, holistic or key takeaways we want to take from this whole thing? Because we did get so many people who were upset mm-hmm. or scared.
I have never seen so many, like, we've
ruffled
Ilya
some feathers.
We've had Ilya Kipchoge on. We've had... the guy from the
Enhanced Games
who said, you know, take any drugs you want, we'll let you get over on it. Mm-hmm. We've had some really controversial. I've
not
never
a reaction
ever
like
seen the reaction that we've had from our audience to this. And you could tell there was two camps. There's the camp that is clearly fans of Maffetone who used the training, who tuned in to hear mm-hmm. what they wanted to hear. And then there was fans of maybe the styling of nutrition that you provide here on Fuel for the Soul mm-hmm. that we're now like, what is this? This is not what I know. So it was actually interesting.
It was super interesting. And I think that it speaks volumes to the community that we've built around Fuel for the Soul. We have so many people who now trust us to help them with nutrition fears and questions that they've had with their training. I mean, we see you guys are amazing when you share, especially at a lot of these recent like hydration stops, just the people that are so thankful for how much the advice that we have given here or things that are put out on Instagram are helping them in their daily lives and their racing. So we have built such an amazing community that I think people feel comfortable coming to us and being like, what the heck? You know, so I was not annoyed at all with the mass influx of questions about this because I think it just speaks volumes to the good stuff that we're doing here. And so, of course, we had to address it. But I think the overarching thing here is find the fuel strategy that works for you and do not let anyone question it, right? Don't let statements that contradict what you're doing and you know works for you and you know is right for you, don't let them make you question that. And if they do, come to someone like us or like an expert to talk through those thoughts and those fears that you're having, because it's probably something that you're not quite confident in your fueling yet. So, you know, I think it's really important, instead of just like hopping on a new bandwagon because you heard something and it sounded convincing, to really think about like, what is working for me? And then maybe ask those questions like a lot of you did. You know, I think that that is just so important, is to never forget, you know, like, we don't need to abandon what's working.
And make sure you hydrate.
We've done a lot of hydration education lately.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone who reached out to us and requested this bonus episode you're getting this week.
I'd like to get feedback from this one. If you listen to this mm-hmm. and you listen to the Maffetone one, I want to know what you're thinking now. If this was helpful.
For sure.
And if you have follow-up questions.
I love it.
Yeah. Bees and carrots.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
That was so good. Got it in there. All right. Thanks, everyone, for okay.
You know what doesn't have carbs? Or it does
vodka.
Have carbs, I guess. Peas and carrots.
Oh.
Vodka for you.
Vodka. That's in the outtakes. Bourbon. No carbs.
Potato sauce.